Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. So today I'm excited to bring on another PhD. We've been pretty busy these past 2 weeks. This will be like our fourth PhD coming on the show, so I'm pretty excited. This one is coming to you virtually over Google Voice. Skype was not working to our benefit today, and I can't always be in other parts of the country. So our new co-host today, she comes to us from California. She has a PhD in biochemistry from the University of California, San Diego. So I'm pretty excited about that because I haven't had a biochemist on yet. And I mean, this woman has worked for some of the largest biotechnology companies in the world. And more importantly, she's not just a PhD in biochemistry, but she's also got an MBA from Wharton School of University of Pennsylvania. So somebody who lives right here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, only an hour north. I know that school well. I have colleagues that I've also attended there. So it's pretty cool to see that all connect up. But more importantly, we'll bring on this co-host today for you guys, because if you have not heard of this book yet, you're definitely going to know about it today. But she's also an author of The Secret Life of Fat. And this is such a huge subject these days that people don't know how to address it. They don't know how to properly talk about it. Most people are focused on just the dietary practices. And I'm excited to see where we're going to go with this conversation today, because one of the things I learned just from studying up on her is that we're dealing with $60 billion a year annually spent in fighting fat. So without further ado, guys, we got Dr. Sylvia Tara on the line today. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, I'm excited. So you have a crazy background. You've been doing this a little while, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've been in biotechnology for a long time. I got my PhD in biochemistry back in 1998, so I've been in the world of science for quite some time.
So what got you into this? Was this something that you were just inspired from youth? Are you already leaning this way due to parental influence? What got you into biochemistry?
My father was a chemist. I always had an interest in science and looking at how things worked and really the body, just all these kind of diseases and problems with the body and all these incredible inventive ways that scientists would find to cure it or treat it. And so it was a natural inclination for me, I think. And then I really got more specifically into fat because I gain weight really easily, and I have gained weight easily since I was a child. And I know the whole time I watch people eat whatever they want. My friends, you know, when I was a kid especially, we'd eat candy, cake, ice cream, didn't matter, and they didn't gain weight, and yet I would. And that maintained into my teen years and my 20s, and I had to work very hard to keep it off. So I'd have to go on a diet, and I could lose a couple pounds, but I'd have to work a lot harder than other people on the diet. They would lose weight really easily. And then it got to a point where, I was gaining weight, especially after having kids, and the weight became very stubborn. It just stayed there. And again, I'd see people, work out, go on diets, they'd lose weight pretty easily, or they could eat more than me and then stay fairly thin. And I got very frustrated with this, to the point that I thought, I'm not going on another diet created by somebody else. I'm going to understand everything there is to know about fat, everything. I thought, well, I'm a biochemist, I can do this. I have the tools to go digging around. And I spent 5 years digging through the scientific literature. I read about, over 1,000 articles, scientific articles, and I interviewed dozens of researchers around the world about their cutting-edge research on fat. And what I was learning, it was so astounding, really. I was so surprised by what I was learning about fat that I thought I have to write it all into a book. And The Secret Life of Fat is that book.
What was that initial surprise? Like, obviously, there must have been some kind of culminating point. Was it just because of the discussions you had? It just kept building and building? Or was there like this one thing that just said, boom, oh, that's it. I've got to write a book about this.
Yeah, what was really surprising, and it kept happening. But the first thing that hit me was that fat is actually really important. It's responsible for critical activities in our body. We think of fat as just excess calories. It's our overeating, and it's stored in our fat for use later. And if we have too much, well, we have to get it off right away. It's good to be as low fat as you possibly can. And it's not true. For one, fat's not just an excess reserve of calories. It's actually an endocrine organ, meaning that it's producing hormones, releasing them into our bloodstream, and our body depends on those hormones for so many things. One is that our immune system has receptors for some of these hormones, and so our fat actually keeps our immune system strong. Our bones, the strength of our bones depends on fat. Even our brain size is linked to fat. So people have very, very low fat, like anorexia nervosa, or they have defective fat where they're not producing the hormones that fat is supposed to produce. They have smaller brain volume, lighter brains, and you know, when they inject some of these hormones back into them, if they're missing them from their fat, their brains will actually grow again. So even brain size is linked to fat. You know, reproduction. We don't go through puberty if we don't have enough fat or we have defective fat.
Well, you see that with gymnasts, right?
Absolutely. Ballerinas is another one. Runners. If we know too low of fat, you actually can't reproduce. So I think that's what hit me the most, and that's when I thought, wow, this is astounding, and I have to write about this, is that fat's actually an organ. It's not just fat, if you will.
Well, I learned that, and this isn't necessarily a plug. It's just me trying to understand deeper here, but there's a number of doctors on the board of a nutrition company that I use, and I don't know if you've ever heard of a company called Isogenics, but they promote cellular level, you know, detoxification, cleansing, and all that. And somebody along the line over the years, because I've done it on and off, I mean, I've been doing it since 2010, and I love it. I mean, because I'm not trying to remove fat. If anything, I'm just trying to shrink it, per se. And maybe you can correct me on this terminology if I'm wrong, but there's toxicity that can actually build up in your fat cells. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's part of what our fat is for, if you will.
It clears
our blood out.
Yeah.
It's protection. You know, it's a reserve, and there's a hormone that fat makes and produces, or sorry, and distributes to our body. It's called adiponectin. And adiponectin, it actually will help the fat in your bloodstream get guided back to fat tissue. So it actually helps clear the blood of triglycerides, mm-hmm. and it clears out some toxins, too. And they find that people who are fatter, but they have adequate levels of adiponectin, they're actually healthier. And sumo wrestlers are an example of this, where adiponectin gets released if we do a lot of exercise. And so sumo wrestlers are 300 to 400 pounds, they're totally obese, but they exercise 6 or 7 hours a day. And they actually don't store their fat in the visceral area. For all the calories they're eating, those extra triglycerides are being stored into their subcutaneous fat, which is healthier, and that's the fat right underneath your skin.
Yes.
And so, you know, and so it depends on where you're storing your fat, too, on how healthy you'll be. But yes, I mean, fat does help clear your blood. Healthy fat, well-functioning fat, will help clear your blood of triglycerides and toxins in the blood as well.
Well, and I learned that, actually, thanks to those doctors using the whole cleansing and detoxing program, or as they call it, nutritional cleansing. But from the whole point, big picture that I got, not being a biochemist, was, okay, quick backstory on me that you don't know about me is that you live out west, so you guys know what wildfires are.
Yes, we definitely do.
So when I left the corporate world in like 2009 after going back to school for a degree in marketing and psychology, and I said, you know, I need an adventure. So I went to a fire academy, got certified in wildland firefighting with the U.S. Forest Service, and then thanks to some really good interviewing skills from the business world, I was able to land a gig on a hotshot crew, which these guys are like the crazy elite guys that are sent into the really sketchy stuff. We might not shower for 2 weeks, like that type of stuff. Like, we're in the mountains. Anyway, I did that for 2 years, so 2 summers. And the first season, I got so beat up just from the accumulated exhaustion, going back to your point on the sumo wrestling. So we're just, you know, we're putting 16 hours a day in on the fire line, and we're cutting down trees, and we're breaking open fire breaks, and you're being fed questionable quality food from the fire camps from the federal government. long story short, at the end of that 6 months, I went and backpacked Ireland. I came home and I was like, man, where's my energy at? And I went to a personal trainer event in Boston. That's when I took a class on toxicology of the body. And that's when I learned about visceral fat versus obviously the other fat you just got done discussing, and how visceral fat is really the one that's tied to disease and what collects around the organs. And so, long story short, I tried one of those cleansing programs, and I was not trying to lose weight. I didn't want to remove fat. I wanted to maintain my lean muscle. I just wanted energy back. And after like the first 2 weeks, I noticed the energy right away. And at the end of the first month, I had probably dropped about 7 inches over my whole body. And I'm like, what is this? And that's when I really started geeking out on stuff like this. So that's why I'm really excited to have somebody like you on, because you can add some legitimacy to the knowledge behind this and why it's so important to understand what your body's actually doing, because that was my first wake-up call. I had no idea about toxicity. And long story short, I think I was just probably really, really toxic I don't know.
Yeah, so what was the cleansing regimen? What did they have you do?
I mean, basically, it's their program. Like, you, first of all, like, they reckon you're on their shakes because most of our food is nutrient deficient. So they have very, very high quality, you know, nutrient dense meal replacement shakes. And so we go on two of those a day. But I followed the old school program, like the hardcore one, where literally you only had 2 days of replacing two of your meals with the shakes just to jack your nutrient level up. And you're taking some other supplements, vitamins, stuff like that. And then boom, we went right into a maximum, no more of 48 hours of fasting, but with their support system. So you're taking the special snacks that the doctors have formulated, and you're drinking the cleanse. I call it the cleanse drink, but the support drink. And I guess a lot of what their design came from the, oh gosh, I'm blanking on it. The lifestyle from India tied to yoga. I'm not sure. I'm blanking on what it's called right now. But anyway, a lot of their science came from that, incorporating that in how they designed the cleansing process. But long story short, that was my first experience ever doing intermittent fasting or any kind of fasting. But the point is, you're basically getting your body to say, hey, I'm going to let my organs go on vacation. You're not really, you know, basically having to break down and digest major food. You're only just consuming small amounts of snacking throughout the day. You're hydrating like crazy. You're drinking this cleanse while you're fasting. And that's all I did. And I only had to do 4 of those days in the whole month. So I did 2 in the first week, 2 in the second week, and then I followed their shake regimen the rest of the month. You know, still eating one healthy meal a day, the shakes throughout the days, you know, my vitamins and everything else. And at the end of the month, I went back and I remeasured. And so now I still do that regimen to this day. Every 4 months, I'll cycle in one of those full-blown cleansing cycles. You don't have to do it at that level. You can do intermittent periods. There's people who sometimes just drink their cleanse supplement like throughout the day anyway, just for energy. But the point was to teach your body to say, hey, you need to go on vacation, so to speak, and let's focus just on getting your liver and your kidneys up to par, because I had been so beat down. I don't know. Am I using that the right terminology? Was I beat down to that point?
It sounds like you're just tired. It sounds to me like you just had a body reset.
Yeah.
And our bodies like things that are dependable and things that are reliable. So they don't like a lot of changes in diet. They don't like us going up and down. And it sounds like you got, for the month at least, you were on a regimen where it started to know what to expect, and it could adjust to that and get more regular.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sounds like through the fasting, it learned how to start burning through fat cells.
Yes.
Right? So over, like, you know, for energy. And so that probably gave you some energy. And depending on how high sugar you were getting in these shakes, if it wasn't that high, you were getting off that dependence, you know, having a lot of insulin come out and having that dependence on glucose and learning to use your fat more for things.
Yeah, that was part of the reasoning. The one doctor did say that. He said, listen, the point of you going through this is to basically make your body attack your storage and release the toxins back out into the bloodstream. But then, and the side effect of that is to boost your body's ability to cycle that toxicity back out like the right way. Basically, you're peeing a lot because you're, you know, consuming lots of water to help flush the system, because you want to get extra excess toxicity back out of the body the right way. But to their point, a lot of us have gotten so toxic that the liver and the kidneys and everything else involved in that process, again, you can define that better than I can, but are just not performing at peak ability, which is why they got stored in the fat cells to begin with. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, there's a number of things. I think, well, fasting is great for, you know, having your body start to rely on fat more. And I do it myself. I do intermittent fasting almost every day where I don't eat after 3 or 4 o'clock, and I won't eat until the next morning around 10 o'clock. And, you know, what I find is that it's just a great way for me to maintain weight. And, again, I have very stubborn fat. And so, and I can, it gives me some latitude. I can eat kind of what I want at lunch. I don't have to be so strict. And as long as I do that fast, I can stay thin. But it seems like just controlling your intake to be a few things that your body started to know was coming the next day, you could plan. Because one thing is that our bodies build out the pathways, the biochemical pathways. So like if we eat a lot of fat, our body starts tilting towards biochemical pathways that know what to do with fat because your body adapts to its environment. You know, on the flip side, if we stop eating fats and sugars and we eat a lot of whole grains and fibrous foods, our body will reduce those other pathways, those biochemical pathways, and start expressing proteins involved in different pathways that know what to do with fibrous foods and whole grains. So you kind of set yourself on a whole different path depending on what you do every day. When you're doing things up and down, like one day you fast, the next 7 days you eat like a glutton, your body, it's hard. It doesn't quite know what's coming. And the pathway that it's going to be on isn't as strong. You know, but the more you do something, it's like you cycle up or you cycle down. And so if you stay on, you know, fasting, you stay on whole grains, your microbiome changes, right? So the bacteria in your gut will change to adapt to that diet that you're having, and that has a whole host of effects. You know, the bacteria in your gut has an effect on your brain, on your health overall. And then the pathways that your the proteins that your genes will express, right? The pathways that know what to do with that diet will start to get stronger and work more reliably. Hmm. And so a whole bunch of things happen. I think one thing that probably benefited you is that the fasting probably helped. Being on a healthy diet for a long time, your body started learning what to do, and the pathways that were involved with other things, like if you're eating junk or, you know, getting a lot of fumes and I had to deal with toxins all the time, they could start to rest and the other pathways start to get strong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were obviously, you're, again, 16 hours of digging in the dirt and cutting trees with chainsaws, and you're hiking with 45-pound packs and 25-pound chainsaws on your shoulder, and you're doing this for literally 2 weeks straight with no days off until you get your required federal days off for health. And then you come right back out again after 2 days off and you go do that again. And you do this over and over for the whole summer. So like 2,000 hours in 6 months is, yeah, it was it was an eye-opening change of lifestyle. But then because I was a Sawyer as well doing this, like it's not just the workload, but it's also you have to fuel the body. And we were just eating all the time. I mean, we had to. Yeah. We were burning through that caloric burn, that energy unit, which a lot of people don't understand calories. Actually, would you like to explain real quick for our audience what a calorie is?
Well, the official definition, it's you know, to burn 1 kcal. How does it go? 1 kilogram. Oh, I'm going to forget it now. I can't believe it.
Well, it's a unit of energy, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah, so a unit of energy, raise one, like you know, a kilogram of water by 1 degree Celsius or so. I mean, that's like the official definition, but it is a unit of measurement of heat that we can produce.
Yes.
And so, you know, different things in our body. It's actually been measured pretty carefully by Wilbur Atwater in the early 1900s. And so, you know, different kinds of food produced allow us to produce different amounts of heat from it.
Okay.
So something with a lot of fiber, you know, actually doesn't turn into calories. It just passes through. Whereas something that's either more fats, you know, that can give us some more calories.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, essentially what it is. But our bodies, you know, we use calories in all kinds of different ways. And this is one thing I explain a lot in my book, The Secret Life of Fat, that, you know, what one person eats, what you eat, what I eat, we do different things with our food and our intake. And so depending, again, on the bacteria in your gut, depending on the hormone levels and your age, you know, even depending on gender and your genetics, like some people put more of those calories into fat than other people do. Hmm. And, you know, what's interesting is women actually partition more nutrients into fat than men. So through nutrient partitioning, say, for example, if there's 100 calories that you eat versus what I eat, you might put 10% of those calories into fat automatically. You know, my body will put about double that into fat automatically just because of gender and the genetic components.
Now, can you reprogram that? Or is that hard-coded?
Not completely. No. I mean, some of it is you can reprogram your bacteria, but your genetics you can't, your gender you can't. And if your hormones are lower, you don't have as many fat-busting hormones like testosterone growth hormone, which naturally ebb with age. You can't do anything about that. I mean, you can go get testosterone injections or something like that, and you can exercise a lot, which will help. But these are things in nature that just happen. It doesn't mean you have to be obese, and I want to make, you know, a point of that because my book's not an excuse to be fat. It's just that people like me have to work harder at it. Mm-hmm. So I have to do more miles on the treadmill. I have to really watch what I eat. I do intermittent fasting. But for me, what all the research did when I finally learned all the different ways we get fat is I could stop feeling guilty. It would seem like, you know, going on a diet, if it wasn't working, clearly there's something I'm doing wrong. It's working for everyone. Why is it not working for me? And I've heard a lot of people say, well, I think I'm just meant to be fat because these diets don't work for me. But that's not the case. You have to be smarter about your fat. You have to know the ways you get fat, why you might have more of a challenge than someone else. And once you learn that, knowledge is power. You can stay on it or you can tweak the diet because now you know what your issue might be and you can just make accommodations for that.
Well,
I know my editor... Sorry, go ahead.
No. Please go with the editor, yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say my editor, after I handed him my book to edit, he lost 15 pounds. And it was just because he now understood. He understood why he got hungrier at night. He understood leptin levels plummeted at that time. Ghrelin levels are higher at that time. Like, he could just make sense of everything he was feeling. And he actually took off 15 pounds in a few months. It was quite remarkable.
Well, to your point, I mean, because like, again, the point of the show, we talk about, you know, fueling your health, your business, your lifestyle. These all tie together, yeah. Right? He's in a different kind of business than you. But like on your Twitter page right now, your background graphic, I love it because it said, and by the way, for our listeners, and this will be in the show notes, but you can go to @SylviaTaraPhD to follow her. But your tagline, I love it. It says, know your fat to beat your fat. And then obviously, you know, it's promoting The Secret Life of Fat, the new book and everything. But that tagline is perfect because a lot of what we're doing in life is, if you're doing it the right way, is you should be learning about who you are as a person. And it sounds like, to your point, down to that biological level. I mean, everybody is programmed differently. Everybody's got a different makeup. So I've worked with people nutritionally for years, ever since I got into the isogenic stuff, just because I'm trying to help people. I'm like, guys, we have programs, but it doesn't mean you can't tweak them to fit you. You have to be listening to yourself and figuring out along the way and watching what's happening and discovering how, like to your point, how you store fat differently than I store fat. And it's I think a lot of people just want a cut and dry thing, and it's not that easy.
That's absolutely right, and I really like that approach you have. And I've a lot of good trainers and a lot of good coaches will have that kind of comprehensive approach. A diet has to work for you biologically, for where you are biologically, you know, your age, what's your hormone level, what kind of, you know, genetics might you be dealing with, or family history. And if you have a history of yo-yo dieting, that's a whole different thing that I'll talk about in a minute. But so biologically, the diet has to work. Psychologically, it has to work. Are there foods that you really can't live without and you find yourself grabbing for them and going off your diet? You really have to consider that in what diet you pick. And third, it has to work for your lifestyle. There's some diets out there, they're so complicated. You know, you have to, like, there's 20 ingredients you're allowed to have, another 150 you're not allowed to have, and you have to sit there and prepare meals and eat like five or six meals. It's like, who's going to do that unless you're a stay-at-home person who has all this flexibility?
Yeah, if you become like an online craze and are you making plenty of residual income off of your online business so you can work from home all the time and you've got that freedom and you have assistants and a team, which we all want to get to that point, obviously, right? We want your book, you want your book to be successful so you can get some, maybe a couple more assistants to help you or whatever. But the point here is like, no, it's very hard to have a lifestyle like that. We've got to build things for people that are realistic and sustainable. And I love in some of the research you had sent me, I love this. You have a comment in there. Fat is an obsession. It's a dirty word. And I always like to refer to the word diet as a bad four-letter word, because to me, psychologically, diet to me, when I look at it, thanks to all the bad magazine articles and everything else out there, it's a short-term mindset. To me, when I see the word diet, people aren't seeing the word long-term lifestyle, that phrase. When I look at it, it just makes me think short-term. And that's just my experience from the fitness world and just for myself. When I look at the word diet, I don't like it. I like the word lifestyle. Psychologically, to me, it makes better sense.
You're so right on this. In fact, there's great research that I talk about in The Secret Life of Fat that is around research that came out of Columbia University. So what they found is that when people gain weight and they lose it, their bodies change completely, and maintenance becomes as important. So our fat releases a hormone called leptin. And when leptin normally keeps us fairly satiated and it keeps our metabolism high. But when we lose fat, we lose leptin, which means our appetites go through the roof. We want to eat all the time. And our metabolism gets slower. And it actually controls, there's fMRI images that show how the brain reacts after we've lost some weight. We get more sensitive to food, images of food. So we respond more to food. So we get a little obsessive. And when that happens, what they find is that people who've lost, say, 10% of their body weight, they actually have to eat 22% fewer calories than someone who's naturally at the target weight to begin with. So say if you were, 150 pounds, you went up to 180 pounds, and then you lost weight to get back to 150 pounds, you would have to you'd have to eat 22% fewer calories than someone who was at 150 pounds who never gained the weight to begin with. And that's, again, because our metabolism slows after we lose some fat. And what's really interesting is it doesn't matter really how you lost the fat. If you got liposuction, the same thing happens. Your metabolism goes down. So it's the leptin that is produced by fat that has these wide-ranging effects on our body. And so you're so right in that it's not just about losing the weight, which is hard enough to do. You have to maintain that, because what they find is that that effect of leptin, the effect on our appetite and metabolism, it's been studied for up to 6 years, and it doesn't necessarily go away. In fact, they're not sure if it ever goes away. So you might be permanently, if you've yo-yo dieted, gone up and down, you have a different body, you're burning fewer calories, and you have a higher appetite than someone who's never gained weight to begin with. So maintenance is about as critical as losing weight to start with.
So I don't want to call you out here, but do you have a position on liposuction?
Well, you know, it's funny because and one of the liposuction studies, they found, there's a couple of them that I cover in The Secret Life of Fat. And so people who had liposuction, you know, from their abdomen or hips and thighs, it actually grew back. The fat grew back, and it grew back in a less healthy area. It grew back in the visceral area, which is that fat under the stomach wall nestled against your organs. Mm-hmm. And that's more dangerous because it tends to get more inflamed. It's linked more to diabetes and heart disease. And so the fat's growing back, but in a less healthy area. Now, in a different study, they found that people who had liposuction, but they exercised 3 times a week, about 30 to 40 minutes aerobic exercise, about half an hour of strength-building exercise, their fat stayed off, and it didn't grow back in the visceral section. But then it makes one wonder, well, if you had just exercised to begin with, would you have needed liposuction at all? And so, you know, if you have like a, I don't know, spot fat, like in some weird way or shape that's really bothering you, I guess you can go ahead and get liposuction, but you still, there's no getting out of having to do the work.
Well, my thing is this.
To maintain a lower fat level.
It's... The question I've always wondered is, I've always heard that, you know, we've supposedly are born with a set amount of fat cells. Would you agree with that? Is that something that, as long as we don't fill all them up, technically we don't need to produce more? Is there something to this?
Yeah, that's been studied a bit, and I think there's some research that came out of Sweden, and it showed that we overall have a stable amount of fat cells in our body, and they use carbon dating and different methods to try to study this. I think more research really has to be done. One is we do have stem cells that create new fat cells as we need them. So when we go from normal weight to, say, obesity, hard for me to believe we're not actually creating more fat cells. I think we are. Our fat cells can do two things. One is they can expand and become larger, but we can make more fat cells, and we do that.
And that's the case in obesity, correct? We are seeing not just larger, expanded, like filled up cells, but we are seeing you get the spillover point. And because, again, fat is an organ and it's designed to protect us, our body will respond by saying, okay, there's still more stuff I got to store, so I got to make more fat cells. Is that a layman's way to explain
that?
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, if you think, how do you go from underweight to obese? Your fat cells would have to be the size of marbles, right, to handle all the extra fat. You would have to produce more cells, and our bodies are good at adapting to the environment. And so, you know, as we need things, it kind of figures out what to do, and it sets up those pathways, and we do create more fat cells. And, you know, something really interesting, you know, it's a little bit of an aside, but our stem cells can create fat even in the absence of food. And so there's one story I give on some research I present on in The Secret Life of Fat on anorexia nervosa patients. Some of their bone marrow starts turning into fat. So the stem cells, you know, they're in the bone marrow, and instead of making, you know, muscle or bone or something else, they'll actually default to making fat cells. And one thought on this is because anorexia nervosa patients are so deficient in fat that their body, it's the last desperate attempt to try to make some fat.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's very interesting. So, you know, fat cell creation and its destruction, it's part of an ecosystem in your body. But, you know, again, hard for me to believe that, you know, if we go from underweight to overweight, that we're not making more fat cells.
It just seems like a no-brainer. Like, I guess a lot of people just don't think about it. But it's like, okay, guys, if, again, back to knowing fat, right, and how to beat it. But it's like, okay, guys, if you know you're gaining weight and you've let this go on for a year or two, like there's a gentleman, I got off a conference call before us getting on this episode. And I don't know for sure, but this gentleman, I believe, is about 450 pounds. And... Mm-hmm. So I know for a fact that, I mean, we're gonna work with him, right? We're gonna help him out, and because he's gonna be following the program that I put my parents on, and from that Isogenics World stuff, because it's been an amazing success, and he wants it. But I made sure I reminded him, like, listen, just make sure this is a journey. This isn't some kind of flash in the pan, you know, starvation diet thing or anything like that. Like, this is literally reprogramming a new lifestyle. Your body's gonna be going through hormonal rebalancing and everything about leptin you're talking about. Like, there's a whole process that this guy's about to go through, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because you're not just shrinking a reserve of calories. Remember, fat's not just excess food. It's an organ, and you're shrinking an organ. Imagine if you were shrinking your heart or your lungs. Your body would really have to adopt to this new change to it. So when you're shrinking fat, the hormone levels that fat creates, that's changing, because fat is an endocrine organ. It produces hormones. You know what it can produce changes. The effects on your body. So leptin, one of the most critical hormones that fat makes and produce and distributes to our body, there's so many different tissues that have receptors for leptin, meaning they bind with leptin. And once they bind with leptin or any other hormone, the behavior of those cells changes. And so when you have less leptin, your whole body has to adjust to this now. And it takes time. You know, it takes you know, several months to get into this new way of being. And so it is a journey, and you have to keep on it. And then maintaining it, you know, afterward, it's, like I said before, it's just as much work as losing weight to begin with. So it is a lifestyle.
Well, and I think that's something that, because, again, for our listeners, recently we had Vinnie Todorich on the show, and that's how I got to learn about you and a lot of other doctors like Dr. Fung and a lot of other great experts like yourselves who have taken the mission to really dig into something that's not, has become a $60 billion industry, which is fat. And I think the most important thing that I love about Vinnie is, like, you were talking about grains and stuff earlier, but admittedly, I have always been pretty grain-free and very low sugar in my life. So I don't have a weight issue. If anything, I have to fight to keep weight on. So, because I'm all, you know,
oh,
I'm,
you're lucky.
I'm, oh, sorry. I know you probably don't want to hear that, but I'm a CrossFitter. So, you know, it's a lifestyle. Like, I can actually take a week off from working out and I will actually lose weight because I'm not maintaining that muscle growth and that retention. But obviously I don't want to create those crazy riffs all the time. But back to the lifestyle point is, you know, I do incorporate in a very strong dose of his NSNG promoted lifestyle, the no sugars, no grains, because I was already pretty much bread free and very low sugar anyway. So, but I've been loving this new fat adaptation lifestyle, trying to figure out this whole ketogenic state. And admittedly, I got to dig into that deeper because I don't know if I'm doing it perfectly yet. But, you know, I do the whole, have you ever heard of Dave Asprey, the Bulletproof guy?
Yes, I know Dave.
Okay. So yeah, I love that. I follow his feeds. I'm literally standing here talking to you and drinking some fatty coffee. So, and it's because to your earlier point in the show, a lot of people are, I like to use the word fat deficient. I mean, I think people have listened to 20 years of incorrect marketing on nutrition and the upside down food pyramid of our country. And people are not realizing, like, guys, you've stripped so much healthy fat sources out of your diet that your brain is starving. You know, I have people close to me that suffer from depression and other mental concerns. And it's like, guys, like, it's probably your brain starving, to be honest with you. Again, I'm not a PhD. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot in what you just said there. I mean, the $60 billion weight loss market, that's huge. And it's been going on for a while, which means we're spending more on the war on fat than we are on the war on terror, honestly. The Homeland Security budget's about $47 billion or so.
Wow.
And so, yeah, year after year, I mean, we're treating fat like an enemy, we're fighting it, and we're losing. And that's because we keep throwing incorrect weapons at it, things that aren't working. And that's the point of my book, why I wanted to really share what I learned, is that you have to really understand your fat if you want to control it. And if you just keep throwing, you know, these gimmicks at it, and there's so many books out there. It's, you know, oh, lose 10 pounds in a month, or like eat whole grains and burn thigh fat or whatever. It's like, yeah, you know, this doesn't work like this for everyone. It makes for very easy selling of products. Very simple message, promises in there, a promise, you know, hope, and that you can, it can be so easy. You don't ever have to feel hungry. I've heard that in a lot of diet plans too. And it's just, it makes for easy selling of books. It doesn't do a lot to actually burn off your fat. And that's what, there's no getting around hard work and so from feelings of sacrifice, you know, to really modulating your diet and how you feel to get through fat. And those diets that you mentioned, you know, the ketogenic diet or the very low carb, low grain, they're great for people. And there are good diets out there. You know, what I found, I've been on some of these in the past, is that lifestyle-wise for me, they were hard. I was on Atkins for a while. I certainly lost weight, very low-carb diet. Mm-hmm. Not eating carbs ever, I mean, that was hard. So I work, I travel, I do things, and I don't have time to plan. I don't have time to look for special foods. I need to be able to eat what's around me.
Yeah.
And for at least for me, you know, what worked, and again, this is where I get into your diet has to work for you biologically, psychologically, and socially. I love intermittent fasting, where I don't eat from like 3 o'clock to about 10 o'clock the next morning. That's pretty severe. Most people, you know, can shorten that window a little bit, but my body's very stubborn. My fat is very stubborn. Mm-hmm. But I like that diet because I can be a little loose, you know, around lunchtime. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be absolutely no grain or no sugar. I can kind of eat what I want. And as long as I do that fast, it helps burn it off. And fasting is really important because we spend a lot of time really focusing on insulin and sugar. There are so many diet books on insulin and sugar, and it's actually, they've been published and it's been known about that link of insulin and fat really since the 1500s, and King Henry VIII's doctor had talked about this, you know, before. So there's really, there's not much new on the insulin, sugar, and fat connection. You know, you eat a lot of sugars, you get insulin, and insulin clears your blood and it helps store fat. But there's so many other hormones to think about, and that's what's really different about The Secret Life of Fat, is it's not a one-trick pony, it's not just one thing, it's very comprehensive. I mean, there's growth hormone that we can start to look at, there's testosterone that you can
HGH is a huge thing that I started learning about. Like, a lot of people hear the word HGH, like human growth hormone, they think they have to artificially add it to your body. I'm like, you do realize the body makes its own HGH, right? Like, that's how we're rebuilding our muscles and getting stronger. And it's like, again, if your body is properly aligned, properly fueled with the right nutrition and the right nutrients and right minerals and everything else, like, everything is going to be fine. Like, your body will produce your HGH. I don't know. I mean, again,
And there's great ways to promote the release of HGH. So intermittent fasting, that's one thing it's thought to do. So our growth hormone levels peak at night. And so if you extend, when we eat, we mitigate the levels of growth hormone. So if you fast, you know, for a while before bed and for a while after bed, it's thought to extend the release of growth hormone. The other interesting thing is ghrelin, which is a hunger hormone that's produced from our stomach. It actually promotes the release of growth hormone. And so if you can stand a little bit of hunger at night, you know, your growth hormone's peaking and you're extending the release of it, and it's a great fat burner, which is why I can eat something like chocolate at noon and not really gain weight. It's a great gift. It is hard to get through, so you have to have the fortitude to get through that fasting period, but it helps. Exercise is another thing that's really good. So, you know, it's been shown that certain types of exercise promote both testosterone and growth hormone, which are both fat-burning hormones. There was a study that I talk about in my book in which they had a group of men do four sets of eight squats and eight leg presses, and they saw that testosterone and growth hormone, it peaked after that. They actually increased their release of this. And that another study where they had a group of men do 2 hours of aerobic exercise, and their growth hormone actually for a 20-hour period was higher than it was if they didn't do the exercise. So there's natural ways, too, that we can promote the release of those hormones.
Well, I love that because, again, you being a doctor, you've studied this a little while. I'm not a doctor, but I've at least over the past 6 years learned a lot more about the benefits of fasting and the cleansing piece paired into it. And I don't always, like when I fast, I don't always need to cleanse per se, because to that point, if you're super, super healthy, your body already knows how to go through a detoxification process. Am I correct on that? This is a natural thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our body knows how to clean itself. That's what our kidneys are for, our liver are for, our fat helps with that, all of it does. I think if you're putting an excess and you're overwhelming it and it's different every day, it's just confused. No matter what, you can overload your body to where it's not functioning ideally.
Yeah, and especially nowadays, I think here in the U.S., I mean, how many people are overworked? They don't have enough sleep. So I love this whole Dave Asprey, like the biohacker world, like Tim Ferriss, all these guys. Like I said, I'm looking forward to reading your book because I've read you know, Dr. Fung's book. I've read, one of my favorites is, have you ever met and worked with Dr. Perlmutter from Grain Brain?
Oh, yes, I have. I've read his book.
Yeah, what do you think about that? That was a great book.
Yeah, it's good. It's around, you know, around the, I guess, genetically modified foods and how the foods are changing and getting too much insulin-provoking food. So it's, again, along the insulin axis.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important that your book, so it sounds like, is there like a whole chapter just on like leptin and ghrelin and all that, or?
Yeah. So my book it's an interesting read, and I told it, it's not really just straight fact, like an encyclopedia. It's told through the stories of researchers and how they made the discoveries of patients and what they went through. So it's almost like a narrative, if you will, like a good medical nonfiction read. And there's a whole chapter on how our fat fights back. So about leptin, about adiponectin, about all the hormones that fat releases and why it's hard to maintain a lower weight. There's a whole section in the book about all the different ways that we get fat. So, you know, how gender plays in, how genetics play in, how our microbiome plays in. There's even a part of it on viruses. There are certain viruses that we can catch that are associated with a much higher risk of obesity.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
It's shocking to people. They get scared, and I don't mean to scare people, but, you know, they do find this. There's a virus called AD36, and they've studied this in, you know, over 1,000 people. And when people have ever carried this virus, they have a 3- to 4-fold higher risk of obesity than someone who hasn't. And that's because this virus is thought to create more fat molecules and create more fat cells as well. And so it's not that you have to be obese if you have this, but you do have to work harder. Your body has a propensity to store fat with this virus.
Well, and again, going back to the big picture that I'm getting from this whole, you know, session with you, and obviously the value of this book is you're not trying to freak people out with this new, you know, disease. It's not even a new disease, but this illness you just spoke about. But this is, again, knowing what can happen, knowing what's out there, and just being aware. And just knowing more about how your body's working, it's going to be a journey for some people. You have to start at least listening and observing your body and seeing what's happening as you're going through these changes or these new tests to try and, to your point, you had to get involved with intermittent fasting and then play around with that for a little while to figure out what that master plan was for you specifically.
Yeah, I had to hone my own diet. And again, what this book, my intention really is to just help people. If they've had stubborn fat or they've been like me where diets aren't really working, you can't figure out why other people are losing more on the diet than you are. Or you can't figure out people like you, honestly, who can eat what they want and then have a problem keeping weight on. You have to understand your body. And there might be reasons you're gaining weight or having trouble losing weight to compare to other people on the same diet. And once I learned that, I was able to take off 30 pounds and I've kept it off.
That's awesome.
I don't have any more like siren songs coming at me like, oh, try this and you'll lose weight. I don't get deceived by diets. It's like I kind of got it. I understand my fat. I get an idea of why it's hard for me to lose. And I know I have to work harder than most people. It's just the way it is. And I don't feel sorry for myself. It just is. But I feel empowered because now I know what to do. My weight's under control. I'm in control of my fat. It's not in control of me. And I really wish this for everybody. If you're bothered by your level of fat, there's something you can do about it, but you really have to be informed and educated to know what that is.
I agree with that. And I know, like I said, we've talked about Vinny before, and obviously I do promote reducing a lot of excess sugar in people's diets because I do see, usually initially, there's going to be some, you know, chemical connection there. You might have some headaches, some people, depending on how addicted they are to their sugars, but teaching people that, wow, you actually do have a lot of sugars already occurring in your vegetables, so do you really need a lot of that extra processed stuff? But just... like I was on your website earlier, and I love the fact that you have a nice little giveaway on there, looking to lose 10 pounds in the next 24 hours. I don't know what it all gets into there, but it sounds like that's a fun little e-guide little giveaway there when people put their email in. That's something that's just to get their minds wrapping around this stuff before they even get your book. So is that something easy that people can take action on now?
Yeah, it's great. I think we're giving away Chapter 5 early, which is the key chapter to understand how fat is fighting back in your body and why you have trouble keeping it off. And so that's really useful. And that little teaser you said is actually a joke, lose 10 pounds in 24 hours. And it's telling you that it's impossible to do, and here's why it's impossible and why you should be you're suspicious of lines like that.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're giving away, you know, the book comes out on December 27th, and it's available, you know, everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere.
Can we pre-order now?
Absolutely. Lots of people are,
game
apparently.
On.
Yeah, and especially with the giveaways and things like that, I think it's nice for Christmas. And so it should be very good. And now I've been online. I've been on Figure One doing Q&A sessions, doing a number of podcasts and appearances. So hopefully I'll be able to reach out to readers as much as possible.
Well, and this is one of the reasons why I launched this show. I mean, again, for our listeners, guys, this will be in the show notes, guys, on livethefuel.com for her episode when it comes live. But again, thesecretlifeoffat.com. And I'll be promoting this today all over social media. So before even an episode goes out, I'll be plugging this because this is exactly what it's about. It's education. People need to take 5-10 minutes, or if you can spare, you know, at least listen to the audiobook because you can hit pause and come back later and keep listening. Like, take the time to understand what this is and what's going on inside of your body, hormonally, chemically, all of that. Because most people, they just want the quick fix. Well, the quick fix, that's all it is. It's a quick fix for now. It's not the long-term solution. And from everything you discussed on this show today, a lot of people bounce back in not very, very positive ways.
Yeah, no, it's hard. And that's another thing I think we have to be empathetic towards with people is that weight loss is really hard. And when we ask them to do something that's really challenging, like even getting rid of all sugars, hey, that's really hard if you're living in the normal world.
Oh, yeah, the addiction that goes on in the brain to that, it's not easy.
Well, not only that, but heck, I didn't give up sugar. That was one of my things. Like, I like a little chocolate here and there. And so I just found a diet where, again, it works for me psychologically, it worked for me socially. I do have to sacrifice in other ways, like I do an intermittent fast. And that enables me to have a little bit of sugar here and there, because for me, psychologically, it's important. But, you know, of course, I'm a woman and chocolate's important to me.
Well, and you know what, to back you up, again, back in 2010 when I found the whole Isagenix World stuff, we didn't have chocolates or anything. We were anti-coffee, all that. And then through years of research and stuff like that, now, if I buy that program now, it's got special chocolates that were designed by one of the doctors. Why? Because he's like, guys, it's okay to reward yourself a little bit, especially during that fasting period. But also, there's stuff tied to, like, you know, stress and all that stuff. So again, I'm not the doctor. I just know that it works. So even I now eat the pieces of dark chocolate because, hey, that's a fun little reward while you're going through a fast or intermittent fasting. It's like, reward yourself. Like, feel good about what you're doing, whatever you're working
with. It's actually critical to do, or people don't stay on a diet. I have a whole chapter on the psychology of weight loss and willpower exercise. And one of the studies I cover is how our willpower gets depleted the more that we use it. So people who work in hospitals are encouraged to wash their hands all the time. And what they find is towards the end of the day, when they're getting more tired, they won't wash their hands anymore. It's like their willpower has been depleted. And there's another really interesting study where they have people doing a difficult task, like a puzzle or some other thing where they have to really apply themselves. And then they separate them into two groups, and they let one group watch a happy movie, and they have the other group watch a sad movie. And after they come back to do the task, the people who've watched the sad movie can't work on the task as well. People who've watched the happy movie are energized, and they'll go back into solving the puzzle or whatever task that, you know, that they're asked to do. So actually engineering in some release of stress, some release of applying willpower, is actually very important on your diet, because otherwise, this happens to everyone. You get tired of it, you go have some pie, and then it's all downhill from there. And you think, well, I guess I'm just not strong enough to be on this diet. But really, it's the psychology of willpower. You have to engineer in breaks.
I love that point, because willpower is not an easy thing. I mean, some of us are born a little stronger than others. Other people have to put in the reps. They have to condition it. They have to build it. And to your point, it's also very easy to deplete it. I will tell you, I'll have to get you guys connected up, but I've already had three other PhDs on the show, but they're all psychologists, and they're all from a team here out of Pennsylvania called Mind of the Athlete. And what they do, it's all about psychology. I mean, I've gone to a couple presentations. One was on body image of the athlete. So they talk about how, guess what, just because someone's an athlete does not mean they don't have psychological concerns with body image and everything else. If anything, it's even worse. So I love what they're doing, but I think paired with what you're doing, I'll have to send an email to you and them and get you guys introduced. Maybe there's some future work you guys could do together or whatever, because you're all on the same path. Their niche is working with athletes, but they work with companies and everybody else. But their niche is the psychology piece. Obviously, you come from the biochemistry piece, and you also talk about some of the psychology in your book. So I think there's a lot of crossover there.
Yeah, I think there could be. And the book's very comprehensive. I have a chapter on almost anything, like, you know, the chapter on willpower, the one on the genetics, the gender, the hormones, and the microbiome, and then the whole section on how to understand fat, what it's really doing in our body, why it fights, how it's actually an organ. And so hopefully it's very comprehensive and helps a lot of people. Some of the most demand I've gotten from the book is actually from doctors, because even in medical school, you know, you're taught one way of believing and looking at fat. And this book is very multidimensional. It's across all different lines of research. And so it's really been helping people just appreciate fat in a new way.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do, obviously we do, I know you have a goal for time today, and I don't want to keep you on too much longer. But since you brought that last point up, I want you to help clarify that for our listeners. I am constantly teaching people, only because other doctors have admitted this to me. A traditional MD, or the average everyday doctor, does not know hardly anything about nutrition, because they don't actually learn it in college. Would you agree with that?
That's completely true. I mean, there's a four-year college program. You can learn so much. And I think if you go and specialize in obesity, you're going to learn more. But for the general primary care doctor or any other type of doctor,
even heart doctors.
Yeah, I mean, and you know a certain amount, and you run with it. And there is continuing medical education that doctors are required to take, but it's a whole plethora of topics. They don't have to learn about fat. They can learn about something else to satisfy that requirement. And so I know when I've spoken to doctors and I tell them fat's an organ, it's news to them. They didn't know that. They've not really heard much about leptin or adiponectin. You know, we think that doctors are all knowing, but they're
not.
Mere mortals like the rest of us, right? And they have to, you know, they've had their college and they do their job every day.
And the modern doctors become an assembly line, right? Like they're being paid to treat patients, go, go, go. And I have friends that are doctors and they admit that, like, hey, especially when they're now, a lot of these doctors are now part of these big health networks. So their job is just to keep turning over, just keep going from patient to patient to patient. And unfortunately, a lot of doctors are reaching a point of frustration. The ones who I think are really, really good, because they're realizing that they're not even dealing with symptoms. They're not treating the root causes anymore. They're not actually providing legit, real health care. This is something I'm very passionate about because I have a lot of respect for people who commit, like you, who spend all these years studying and going for these degrees, but then these doctors out there that are supposedly here to keep us healthy, and they're just treating symptoms with drugs. And it's like, that is not the right solution.
Yeah, you know, they are a fast, you know, that short time interval with you, and they are going to try to help you and give you what they know has worked and what people are educating them on is working. It's really important to take your health into your own hands, and the more you can understand it, the more you're equipped to have a good conversation with your doctor or find a doctor who can help you. And there are obesity specialists out there that will know more. Mm-hmm. I do talk a bit in my book, I write a bit about programs that work, and there's a few of them. There's one at Tufts University, there's one at, you know, Joslin Center, where they have these obesity programs. One of the keys for doctors, when someone comes in and they're heavy, they say, okay, well, start eating less and start exercising and come back and see me in a few months. Those programs don't work. The successful programs, actually, the doctor will see a patient at least once a week, and they'll monitor their food log with them. They'll weigh them. They'll be actively hands-on with this patient. And just that having that authority figure, someone checking in with the patient, it makes them take it pretty seriously. A lot of times the patient has gotten there already because there's been a serious trigger, like they've gotten to an all-time high weight and they're really aghast, or they're getting diabetes and they've been sent to an obesity specialist now. And so that's a trigger right there. They're being forced to take that seriously. In fact, that's in my book on the psychology of the chapter on the psychology of losing weight. But then the doctors who stay with them, they see them frequently, and they'll see them for almost a year. Either, you know, they'll start out weekly, then they'll go to monthly, then every couple of months, but they're really staying with the patient. And that kind of coaching and guidance and knowledge and having, you know, a doctor, someone with a position of authority, you know, kind of judge you, kind of looking in, it really keeps people on the rails. And they find that if people can keep weight off for 1 or 2 years, they have a much higher likelihood of keeping weight off permanently. And so I think the way, you know, doctors are approaching obesity too, you can't be too hands-off with it. It's incredibly hard to do this. And I think after people read Chapter 5 in my book, you'll know why. And it's because of that absolute higher drive to eat after we lose weight because of the lower leptin and lower metabolism, that it's a lifelong effort. And most people will come off the diet and regain weight after a year. And it's just a sad truth. And it, just like we don't tell diabetics to, well, just eat less sugar and you'll be fine. You can't really just tell an obese person, well, just eat less and you'll be fine. Their body's in a whole different state,
yep,
you know, than what their target state
and
is.
It's and like to your point and to this book and understanding fat, it's not always an overeating thing. It's what you're eating, and it's also where your hormones are at and everything else. Like some people are just very, very misaligned, and not everybody's the same, and people need to realize that. It's not a cookie cutter solution all the time.
Yeah, and you don't have to feel badly if you don't. Certainly as we age, we're not in the same place we were when we were 20. I could eat a lot more when I was 20.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, as we age, we have less lean muscle. We have our hormones, testosterone, estrogen, you know, growth hormone, they're really declining. And so keeping fat off is hard. I think there's one research that I cover where it was someone at Berkeley National Labs, and they noticed that, you know, men have to exercise a lot more every year if they want to stay the same size. So it's, you know, fat is almost a force of nature, and we just gain it with age. And the scientists finally determined that if you add 1.4 miles to your run every week, you actually can keep weight off. So someone who's 30 and exercising 10 miles a week, running 10 miles a week, by the time they're 40, if they're running 24 miles a week, they'll stay at the same weight. But like naturally with time, we just do gain fat. And it's, you know, don't feel guilty. Don't feel bad like you're failing. It just is. And you just have to work harder at managing your fat with age.
Well, it's funny because I'll be 40 next year. And I will say that I'm in better shape now than I've ever been. But that's because of a lifestyle commitment. And it's also, I'm sort of on the same page as you here, but I always stress this to people that you can and actually Vinny uses this quote, you know, your abs aren't made in the gym, your abs are made in the kitchen, so to speak. But it's the point of 80 to 90% of the equation is what we're fueling our body with and how we're building that lifestyle. You can go and lift all the weights you want in the gym. If you're, what are you putting into the body? How are you treating the body? What is your sleep levels like? All that, it gets tied together. So you can lift all the weights.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely right on that. 80% of weight management is what you eat.
Yeah.
It's like the other 20% to kick it over the edge. That's where the exercise comes in and helps.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, dude, you can't overeat on salad. I'm sorry. Like, good, rich vegetables. I'm like, I've tried it. I've literally filled the biggest bamboo bowl we got in the kitchen. And my girlfriend's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just proving a point.
And well, remember, you're a guy. It's
well,
different for me.
Yeah, that's true. But in a very casual, fun way, the point is, like, nutrient wise and quality wise, I'm not putting a giant McDonald's meal in front of me, right? I'm eating, if I eat a giant bowl of rich green vegetables, and there's a difference there, right? It's quality. That's the biggest difference here. What are we putting in?
That's a huge difference. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we don't even know what we're eating. There's so many fillers and stabilizers and things in food that make it cheaper, easier to produce,
terrible,
and give it a longer shelf life. And I know one thing that changed for me is I cook all the time. You know, I go out and I order carefully, but my taste buds have gotten so sensitive. I can just about taste when there's filler or extra carbs in the food now. And oddly, my children, so my younger one, she loved McDonald's chicken nuggets. We could not get her off these chicken nuggets, but we finally started making our own chicken nuggets with healthy meat. And she developed taste buds for them. She doesn't even want her McDonald's chicken nuggets now. She agrees.
Because that's not even chicken. I don't know what that is, but yeah,
it's the goo.
She her limited taste buds were addicted to whatever's in that. I'm sure there was sugar in that too. But yeah, once you give yourself good, clean, whole food that's untainted, and it's like, wow, there is a difference there, and you're not riddled with chemicals and everything else. Because I mean, Vinny had a great example when years ago he ate a fast food burger and he ordered it just the burger, like no buns, none of the ketchup, you know, special sauce, anything on it. And when you taste it by itself, it's like, what is this thing? You just taste chemicals. But then when you add in the sugar from the buns and the special sauce and everything else, it tastes like something different, because it's literally a flavor profile that they've scientifically developed to build addiction, basically. That's why I talk about, I haven't touched fast food in over 15 years, and I'm proud of that. So it's...
Yeah. No, it's great, because there's a lot of other things. And, you know, the corporations, that they're built to make a profit and keep people hired and answer to their shareholders. So, of course, they're going to look for cheaper ways to make food that cut their costs. And, you know, just be aware of it. Like, things that are called healthy aren't necessarily. And I've just learned to, you know, buy good food, and I cook it up. And I've gotten very fast at cooking from doing it over the years. And, you know, it's better. I know what's in it. And, you know, it keeps me healthier. I don't think I'm getting a lot of stabilizers and fillers in my food.
No. And to your point, like you just said, over the years, so it's like, hey, you put in the reps, you honed your craft, and now you're pretty efficient at it. A lot of people were afraid to sacrifice the time. And it's like, in the beginning, yeah, it might be a little bit more time until you've honed your skill. And then once you get good at it, it's like, for me, it's robotic. I do meal planning now. I do a big cooking on Sundays, get stocked up for the week because I'm traveling. Like, oh yeah, it's a whole system. But that didn't happen overnight. I just started practicing and having fun with it.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you can reward yourself in other ways too, you know, and make sure you do this, because otherwise it feels like all work and you're getting very little out of it. And so one thing that I do sometimes is I just go out clothes shopping, which is good because it forces you to strip down and see your body and everything and see how you look. And then there's a reward of getting something new. It's a reward when you fit into the size you want to fit into. And it's, you know, engineer that in. Make sure that you have fun in your life, because otherwise this is work. I won't deny that. And I'm not one of these people who put out this book saying, oh, lose 10 pounds easily and never be hungry, because I just don't think that's an accurate statement. But, you know, it is work. You have to cook. You have to do the work. You have to buy those kind of groceries. You have to feel a little hungry sometimes. You have to feel like you're not able to have what you want, like cake or chocolate. And it's a bit of sacrifice. It's a bit of work. And so if you stay on it, the rewards are there. You might have to try harder than some people if you have any of these problems that make you gain weight easily. But make sure that there's some fun. You're getting the reward for having lost the weight in there too.
I love that point. And because actually a recent co-host, her name was Christy Jo Hunt from Utah, and she did bodybuilding for a little while and everything else. She's a personal trainer, online brand, and everything else. And she talked to that exact point. She said she had a cleaning woman in her house cleaning, and she walked up with a shocked look on her face because she held up a pair of pants that were a size 12. And she's like, oh, is there something wrong? Did you tear the pants or something? She's like, no, they're a size 12. She's like, and it was hilarious because Christy Joe's was like, she said, that's when I realized like so many people think that because she was a bodybuilder and she's very lean and defined, she's a beautiful woman, very strong looking. And she's like, a size zero or a size one or two doesn't mean you're healthy and fit. And I think that's the biggest thing. She's like, guess what, guys? Like, you know, curves are in. She has muscle. She has strength. And that's what she's developed. And maybe that's not right for everybody. To her point, though, is like, it's not about always the quantity of or the number of pounds that are on the scale. She and I agree. I don't like the scale. I like to throw it out the window. Because in the end, it's about I love to track measurement. And eventually, once you've lost the weight, for example, and you start building your strength back up and you increase your fitness, you may end up increasing the scale again, but that's with muscle and that's with health and that's with strength and it's okay. I think that was her point too. She's like, hey, I'm a strong woman. I am not the featherweight, but she's a very strong, fit woman. She does dancing and everything else. And she's not light and she's not a size zero.
Right. And that's where the BMI indicators, you know, it's inaccurate sometimes because if you have a lot of muscle mass, that's included in your BMI. So you can have bodybuilders that have a BMI that might equal obesity or, you know, equal overweight. And it's not a bad thing. It's not fat. And I know some of the research, you know, lately they've been trying to actually differentiate between BMI and looking at actual fat content instead, which is a much better approach.
Exactly. I completely agree with that. Yeah. I think BMI is becoming a little archaic when you really get good at, you know, body composition like she has done, like Christy has done, or I have done. It's like, guys, that's a good thing for a beginner, right? But once people start really transforming their body, you got to look at things a little bit differently, right? It's about fat percentage, muscle percentage, bone density, et cetera. So there's a whole different makeup. And in the beginning, you're dealing with somebody who's trying to drop a lot of weight and get out of that dangerous, you know, unhealthy fat content. Let me clarify that, unhealthy fat, like the visceral fat. Yeah, that's fine in the beginning. So, because that visceral stuff is dangerous. And again, that goes back to us learning from your book, you know, how to understand more about what's the good fat, what's the bad fat, you know, how do I work with it?
Yeah, work with your fat and not against it.
Yes. So this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on our show because I'm excited about your book. I was already excited about it just from Vinnie Toiteridge's show. So I was beyond excited to see you come on mine and help our audience learn more about this. And December 27th is the launch day. So when our listeners listen to this, because this is going to come out this coming week, you guys still have at least over a week to get your pre-orders in. But to your benefit, Sylvia, I like to close out the show by, you're the co-host, so I want you to have the final word. And this is your opportunity to say, you know what, if everybody forgets everything else in the show, please remember this about Dr. Sylvia Tara, and this is your opportunity to use that as your message. So is there a kind of all-encompassing message you're trying to really get out there? Maybe it's a legacy message. I don't know. What do you want to say to the audience?
Yeah, you know, I guess what I would say is, you know, empower yourself. Fat control might seem elusive. It might seem like you've tried things and failed. The more you know, the more you can manage your fat. Knowledge is power. Fat is not what you think it is. It's not just a reserve of excess calories. It's not something you have to get rid of at all costs. You can have fat and be healthy. But more importantly, you have to understand your fat. You have to understand it's an organ. It's not just sitting there. And you have to know how to work with it and not against it if you really want to manage your fat.
Well said. Thank you. Well, there you go, guys. Work with your fat, not against it. Dr. Sylvia, please stay online so I can say goodbye. But again, to our listeners, hey, guys, this is what it's all about. We're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. I hope you got a lot of amazing knowledge today. If you weren't able to take notes, don't worry. Go back to livethefuel.com. You will see everything listed in her episode. Every single doctor, researcher she mentioned, everything we talked about will be linked there. You easily find her on Twitter, Facebook. I know you're everywhere. And make sure you get her book because this is about knowledge is power. And this book is definitely going to be a must-have for my library. And I hopefully hope for all of you that's going to be added to your library as well. So again, guys, thanks for listening in. This is another Live the Fuel show. Keep living the fired up epic life. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.